This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Let's go around the NFL to keep you in the loop. This is Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Sean Bajani, Adam Spillane in for Locker and Lopez in the loop. Figgy Fig still here. If you'd like to be a part of the show, 713-572-4610. You can call or text the Trailer Wheel and Frame text line. We'll get to this here in just a second, but Figgy. This texture made me feel like an idiot. Said they offer deferred adjudication to anyone that asks, no lawyer necessary. When I said, you know, I used attorneys before and they got me deferred adjudication. So is he saying that you could just go contest yourself and say, I don't have a lawyer. Can I get deferred? And I can save myself like the lawyer fee for $150, whatever it is.
I didn't know that.
That the whole defensive driving thing?
No, deferred adjudication is basically probation. It's saying that you can't get a ticket for like 60 to 90 days, whatever the terms are. I can't remember now. It's been a while, knock on wood, since I've had one of those.
Yeah, I got a ticket probably a few months ago, and I actually did the whole driving course thing.
Yeah, just do the driving
course. Which it was like a...
But you can only do that...
6 hours. You can do it once every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you're younger, like I was, and I was getting tickets on the regular, like... You know, like Berman, I was getting like six tickets a year. The defensive driving thing, bye. I got to figure out another way, bro.
Yeah. No, it actually worked out for me because that ticket was going to be expensive because I was driving through one of those little small towns.
They get you.
The speed limit was originally like 70, 75.
And then it goes
and then
to like 30.
Down to 40. So he got me right there. So yeah. The ticket would have been super expensive, but I ended up coming out of like maybe 150 around there.
At least it happened in like Texas. You like get one of those because I've had to drive across the country quite a bit, and you get one in Florida or you get one in Kansas. It's a whole lot different because then you're kind of stuck.
So I don't worry about that for a while.
Yeah, it was a couple places like in Cleveland. If you get stopped in Cleveland Heights for a speeding ticket. You actually got to go to that court, and you got to go through it in person because there was a bunch of truckers that was there that wasn't even from the area, but they had to go to court. Otherwise, they was going to get in trouble. It was awful, man.
I got one in the – I guess it was a Florida panhandle, and I think I basically just had to, like, plead guilty or whatever just over the phone. Like, yeah, man, I did it. I can't go to court, so I'm not going all the way back to – Tallahassee or wherever I was.
Mr. Spillane, credit card number, please.
Yeah, and they getting over people. Man, they getting over like a fat rat, too,
that. Oh, yeah. All right, so what do you think it would take to obtain Ryan Tannehill?
Not much.
If you're the Atlanta Falcons, there are rumors swirling around that the Falcons are not 100% committed to Desmond Ridder at quarterback, that they would be possibly interested in Ryan Tannehill. There's a couple of ways you can, like, easily make this make sense. Former OC, Tannehill's former OC in Tennessee, is now in Atlanta, Arthur Smith. Titans drafted Will Levis in the second round, and, you know, we just talked about it. Kind of, you know, things starting to trend a little bit more positively for Levis, you know, despite a rough day at the office. You know, he's learning, he's progressing. We're hearing all the same kind of a thing from Vrabel as you hear anywhere else for a young quarterback. But speculation is that the Titans could start the clock on Levis sooner than expected. given his draft position, given the fact that you don't have that fifth-year option for a guy like him in his position, where he wasn't taken in the first round. So here's the thing. How do you make this work? It doesn't make sense if you're the Falcons. Tannehill's got a $36 million cap hit this season, and a post-June 1st cut or trade would result in the Titans saving $27 million with just under $10 million in dead money. Would be good for the Titans, but can the Falcons make that work with just under $11 million in cap space? I think it goes back to a similar conversation that we had in regards to a D-Hop reunion with the Texans. If it's a situation of money, which it usually comes down to, if you need to make it work, you want to make it work, you can do it. Is it worth it for the Falcons to do something like that?
I mean, if they think that Desmond Ridder isn't good, then yeah, because you look at, they spend a lot of capital on running backs. Like, you know, you spend the eighth pick in the draft on Bijan Robinson, like, you can't worry about 5 years down the road. Like, you got to be successful with Bijan Robinson now. And Brian Tannehill, as we've seen, if you give him a good run game, he's going to be successful as an NFL quarterback. And that's what he basically has always had.
Great point.
In
yeah.
Tennessee. So I think that that's a really good solution to a problem that they have, because they've got there an interesting offense and they had success as an offense last year. And they did so with a quarterback who couldn't throw the football, whether it was Desmond Ridder or Marcus Mariota. So yeah, that's absolutely a route that I would look at. And you have to look at it too, when it comes to the money, to make it work, you just give Ryan Tannehill the contract extension. And so that helps offset the money for 2023. And then you have your guy moving forward. And then you're not relying on another quarterback in the future. And as he said, Tannehill has probably had the most success of his career with Arthur Smith. So I think it's actually I think that's a seamless fit between those two organizations. It's great for the Titans. They're not trying to win this year. They are essentially, I don't know if you call it tanking, but they should. There's very little talent on that roster. So I would start with Tannehill if I'm them, and then I go on down the line. And anybody else who has some value, I'm trying to at least get something back, whether it's Derrick Henry or anybody else on that roster. Because as we saw last year, once all those guys got hurt and they lost all those games down the stretch and blew the division, there's not a whole lot of talent there.
Yeah.
And so you might as well start thinking about the future. I think Vrabel is always going to be safe there. He has shown that he's a really good head coach, and so it's not like he has to worry about a couple of bad years and what happens for him. So
it seems like he's gaining power over the course of the last year or so. So it sucks. You know, confession time. I'm a fan of Derrick Henry. I love watching that guy.
Yeah.
It sucks for that guy. But because all
probably done.
All indications, well, maybe he's like T.Y. Hilton. I mean, okay, you look okay against everybody else, but when you play against the Texans, you're going to rush for 200. Or if you're T.Y. Hilton, you're going to catch, you know, two touchdowns for 150 yards. But I like that guy. And you'd want to see your really talented players, you know, thrive for teams that are in contention. And the vibe around the Titans just this offseason, specifically, you're right. I mean, you can call it a tank, you can just call it rebuilding, whatever you want. Like, they're not doing much to improve. And we're always in this teeter-totter situation within the AFC South. And I guess it's like that in a lot of divisions, right? But the AFC South has kind of been, in large part, an armpit of the league. You know, one of the worst divisions. And maybe you feel a little bit more biased here because of everything that you've seen this organization down the road, the Texans, go through, especially over the last 3 years. I feel like we started to get out of that where, hey, look, there's a prospect for Anthony Richardson working out in Indianapolis. Let's see how that goes. Trevor Lawrence had a really great finish to the regular season last year, looked pretty good in the postseason. Let's see if they're on the rise with you know, Peterson as head coach. Maybe he's got Lawrence feeling really good about the offense right now. And then here with C.J. Stroud, you know the upswing here. We're in the midst of it. We're experiencing it. Just like to see it with Tennessee. You know, your rival, your division rival, but your biggest rival in the entire league, not named the Dallas Cowboys. And I think even still, if you pit those guys 50-50, you'd say the Titans are easily the biggest rival. No question, because you play them twice a year, every year, not just once every 4 years like you do the Cowboys. I'm here for it. I'd love to see it. I want to see Will Levis be the starter in Tennessee, not because I'm a fan of his, but because I want to see if that's going to be a flop or a success. What's your gut feeling, Figgy, on that?
Hey, this is music to my ear. If they trade Ryan Tannehill, they're clearly tanking. If they're moving forward with Malik Willis or Will Levis.
Yeah.
I think that's perfect for the Houston Texans because the past couple years, they were tanking. I think it's safe to say they, you know, was tanking.
Yeah.
This year, they're not trying to tank. I think they're trying to win games. They don't have their first round pick this year. So I think that's perfect for the division. It's not a great division, but I think that shows the Houston Texans have a chance to make some noise. I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but I'm not really that sold on Jacksonville as the runaway winner.
Go ahead. Make a bold prediction right now. I think you and I are on the same page here. And I'll give you mine because maybe you're right there with me. But if you're talking about this division right now and I need to come out and say something, I just think the Texans are playing meaningful football games the final 4 weeks of the season this year. That's it. Like, and all that means is when you watch NFL Live, when you watch ESPN, whatever, you see that column on the right side of your TV screen, when they're talking, you know, week 14, 15, 16, 17, teams that are in the hunt, I think the Texans are right there. I think they're in the hunt. I think they're playing meaningful football games the final month of the season.
That would be a good bet to see how long can the Houston Texans stay in the hunt.
When do they get eliminated?
Yeah, yes. So I think, honestly, man, like I said, I'm not really looking at this division as the best division.
Yeah.
So I can see it being similar to the NFC South, where a lot of those teams were still in the hunt up until maybe week 15, 16, somewhere around there. I can see the same thing with the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
I like Jacksonville, so year three, Trevor Lawrence, they have an opportunity to take a leap. You saw how good they were towards the end of last season, winning all those games just to make the playoffs. Winning a playoff game, they really pushed Kansas City in the divisional round. I thought that was just an impressive showing by that group. The wide receiver room gets better. You would think with Calvin Ridley coming off suspension, they spent some money. They bring essentially that whole roster back, another year of experience for Lawrence. So I would say they are the heavy favorites to win the division. Second place, though, is wide open. It really is. Tennessee's not very good. Indianapolis will have a rookie quarterback. So it's there, and I do think the Texans are probably, I've heard a lot of this since the draft. Well, Arizona could wind up with the number one and number two picks in the draft. That's not going to happen.
Yeah,
the Texans are much better than that just because I think people are looking at what you've seen the last couple of years. When you have to remember, they have that entire 2022 draft class that really didn't play a whole lot last year. Derek Stingley essentially missed half the year. They shut down Damian Pierce towards the end of the year. Christian Harris was hurt for part of the year. We never saw John Metchie, on the field. So those guys are going to start to play, and you're going to get more out of Kenyon Green. They actually spent some money in free agency. You know, the last couple of years when it's come to free agency, they basically went bottom of the barrel. They were basically just getting, you know, guys for the minimum.
Yeah.
They weren't going for high-end free agents this past offseason, but they were at least signing real players. Like, Dalton Schultz is a real player who can help you in an NFL team. They go get the guard, Shaq Mason. That's a guy that can really help you. That's a high-level player. So that just improves the overall talent of the organization.
Jimmy Ward, Robert Woods, you know, Sheldon Rankin.
I think, a real head coach now.
I think they just made significant improvements in every position group on the roster. So I said that, like, really from a historical point of view, too. 20 times over the course of the last 22 seasons, a team that finished last in the division ended up finishing first the next year. 20 out of the last 22 seasons, a team has done that. I'm not saying the Texans are going to do it.
There's always the one team that takes a leap.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they can do it, but I do believe, I have a lot of confidence in the fact what I just said. They are going to be playing meaningful games the final month of the season. Problem is, I think if you're going to talk playoffs, right, I think it's way too early to have that conversation. But if you want to talk hypothetically, you have to win the division, I think, to talk playoffs. I don't think they're getting a wild card. Just looking at the way teams are built on paper, that would be in contention next to them.
Yeah, it's just a lot of good teams. And AFC East, they got a lot of good teams.
But those teams beat up on each other. Yeah, like that's the one thing, is that when you are playing six games against AFC East teams, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to run off five wins there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're the Texans, if you're in the AFC South, you know, maybe you split with Jacksonville and then you sweep the games against Indianapolis and Tennessee. And now all of a sudden, maybe Miami goes 3-3 in their, in those six games, you go 5-1, you've got a two-game head start with, yeah, when it comes to the rest of the schedule. And you look last year, you know, Jacksonville goes from having the number one pick in the draft in back-to-back years to getting to the divisional round, yeah, and pushing Kansas City in that playoff game.
They were the latest to do it.
So, yeah, yeah, it happens all the time.
Yep, yep. It's going to be interesting. Next up on Around the NFL, I said maybe the most transparent thing that Tom Brady has said in the last 20 years. That's the way I interpreted this. Just kind of hit me that way. In an interview recently with Robin Lundberg of SI Now, Tom Brady was asked about, you know, his future. It's like the proverbial question that you have to ask Tom Brady. Like, hey, you thinking about playing football again? Would you consider it? He was about as cut and dry as he's ever been regarding his future. Said, quote, "I'm certain I'm not playing again, period." I added the period. But he went on to say, "So I've tried to make that clear, and I hate to continue to profess that because I've already told people that lots of times," end quote. No, he hasn't. This is the first time, Tom. I don't know. Like, maybe you've told people in private that lots of times, but no. And that one time you were really snarky with Jim Gray on that podcast, you still never said, "I'm done. I'm not playing again." This is the first time outside of, like, you know, cryptic Instagram videos and stuff like that. He finally came flat out and said it. "I'm certain I'm not playing again." That's it. Thank you. Can we officially be done with this now?
No, because when you retire and then come out of retirement a month later, yeah, where am I supposed to?
He's never said this before. He's not said this before. There's always been some room for speculation, you know, him and Han. He'll always divert, you know, the question. He's a master deflector. Very Patriots-esque. This is the first time that I've heard anything substantial, like a real answer, come from him. So I'm all in on this. He's part owner of the damn Raiders, for crying out loud now, you know? However.
Yeah. I won't believe none of this until 2 years later.
How cool would it be if the owner of the Raiders came down from the suites and, you know, took over for the often and currently injured Jimmy Garoppolo? Oh, how full circle that would be. One time backup Jimmy G to Tom Brady in New England. Now tables have turned. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I just don't. It's not happening. It's done, and I'm glad to have some finality to it. That's it for Around the NFL. Coming up next, we've got another nugget in regards to a possibility of DeAndre Hopkins in a Houston Texan reunion. Was it all the way squashed by a report this morning? Maybe not. We'll have the latest for you next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
In the Loop, back with you at Sports Radio 610. He's Adam Spillane. I'm Sean Bajani. In for Locker and Lopez. Figgy Fig still here doing his thing behind the glass. If you'd like to be a part of the show, do it. 713-572-4610. You can call or text the Trailer Wheel and Frame text line. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Mr. Ron Hughley will be doing a show with Brandon Scott. Can we call him show? Is he drop that whole
I
thing
I still
now.
Call him show. He don't call himself show.
Okay. He was out of Texans a couple days ago.
He flipping
and
us the bird.
Everybody was calling him
I'm
show.
I'm still calling him show, man. I like that name.
Are you anti-show still?
I like Ron. I call him Ron. I'll go with Ron.
Mr. Ronald Aloysius.
I don't know what you got in your hand.
Oh, my God. Put that away. Put that away, sir. You can't be show holding that. All right, I'll let him explain that if he cares to. I don't think he's going to want to touch that one with a, it's a 3-inch pole. Yeah. yeah, he can deal with that one. Anyway, I wanted to get to this before we discuss the latest on DeAndre Hopkins. Did you guys know about what Mattress Mack is doing for his latest promotion? Allegedly.
I don't.
Mm-mm. I saw this on Twitter. I think it was yesterday. Dude is sleeping in the bell tower at his furniture location on I-45, Tidwell, whatever it is. Tidwell Parker. I should know this. I've only watched it like 30 years of my life. But he's sleeping in the bell tower until he sells 10,000 mattresses. You guys haven't seen this?
I did.
I was hoping one of you saw this damn thing.
That's crazy.
I wanted to know if it was legit. Like, when I saw the promotion.
I'll buy a mattress, but we got to lower the prices here, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, God. He runs those commercials that say, if you buy a $5,000 mattress, you get three times your money back or two times your money back. I'm like, my goodness. Man. If the Astros win the World Series, of course. But 10,000 mattresses, dude sleeping in the bell tower. I wanted to know if one of you, text in 713-572-4610. Is this actually legit? Because when I saw this, what reminded me of this situation, do you guys remember Bear Grylls? Remember Bear Grylls? He had that show like on Discovery Channel a few years back called Man vs. Wild.
No.
You don't remember this?
I heard the Man vs.
He's like, you know, lone survivor guy. He's going to go out and do all this crazy stuff, eat these things, and, you know, show how he survives on his own. If you're ever in this situation, trapped in the Amazon, here's what you do, you know? Well, he got busted sleeping at a local motel one time when he was supposed to be stranded on a deserted island.
Oh, wow.
And so that, I think, ended up killing that show back in the day. At least lost all credibility. It probably died shortly thereafter. But that's what it reminded me of. Like, Mattress Mack.
So you think Mattress Mack could be doing something like this?
That's might
be
I want to know. Is it, how legit is this? Like, who's checked in on Mack? Do we have an update? Is he still in the bell tower?
Or what do this bell tower look like inside? Do we got, like, some real nice mattresses, a flat screen?
AC
cable.
Oh, we got a text. Yes, it's legit. LOL. I work there. Signed Retro. All right. Okay. That's from
I need to see Retro. The inside of this. It might look like a Pablo Escobar prison or something. The pool tables and women and all this other
it's
stuff.
It's been a minute since I've been over to that location. When we mess around, we go to the gallery furniture location in the Galleria. Big baller section, you know. I just like to fantasize about owning a $30,000 plush white
mattress.
Couch one day.
Yeah.
Mattress. Forget about it. If I need a mattress, I know exactly where I'm going for a mattress, and it ain't going to approach anywhere near $5,000, bro. But, yeah. Somebody check in on Mac for me. Text in. Retro says he works there, so I'll take you at face value until somebody says otherwise, I guess. DeAndre Hopkins, I tell you what, I'd like to take the initial report at face value from him when he tweeted out that picture of him driving by NRG earlier this week, and the report from Brooks Kabina a couple of days ago that said he and the Texans had met. I think it was Kabina or John Crumpler. One of the two from Crumpler writes for USA Today, Texans Wire, had that report. Citing multiple sources that the two met. I'd love to take that at face value. Then you start hearing things like, well, he's more interested in Cleveland and a reunion with Deshaun Watson. Then you hear Jacina Anderson report that the Cleveland Browns are not currently interested in adding any wideouts to their roster. Interesting. Think this is
that kind of makes sense, man, because I've been kind of keeping up with them a little bit, and they did address the wide receiver position a lot. They traded their second round pick for Elijah Moore. They brung in a couple other people, so I'm not saying they don't need a DeAndre Hopkins, but
anybody would love to have a DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
You're a Cleveland guy. You follow that team. I'm gonna ask you, Figgy, and then I want your opinion, Adam. Never called you Adam before in my life, I don't think. Just Spo. I don't know what happened there. But I want y'all opinion. you know, the Texans addressed the wide receiver position quite a bit.
Did they?
They did. I mean, they added guys. They didn't add fear factor guys, as you quantified it earlier. Like, who on that in that core scares you? All right, fair.
It's,
I give you that.
It's kind of a whole It's kind of a whole new room, not wide receiver room, kind of.
But is it better?
Yeah, that's
like that's the question.
That's,
like,
that's the unknown.
It's one thing. It's like moving just the chairs around. Is what it feels like.
Yeah.
Nico Collins has talent, but we have not seen him do it, you know, produce actually on the field. Brandon Cooks was gone. Brandon Cooks was like the one guy who I think teams are having to say, hey, watch out for that guy. They don't really have that anymore. And I think that that makes life a little bit tougher on your rookie quarterback. And yeah. So for me, I would want to add somebody into that room who can make life easier on your quarterback and who has to be a guy that the opponents actually have to be concerned about and who they have to basically game plan against. And I don't know if Hopkins is still that guy at this point of his career, but when he did play for Arizona last year, and he didn't play very much last season because of the suspension.
9 games.
He was at least effective. And I do think that that matters. And I do think that just improving that room will only benefit C.J. Stroud, and that's what this season is about.
Yeah.
This season is about putting C.J. Stroud in the best position to be successful, because if he has some success in year one, then that really gets the ball moving to where he can, you know, be good in year two and even better in year three and really take that next step, because otherwise you get into this weird stuff like, you know, Trevor Lawrence had a pretty miserable rookie season, and while Trevor Lawrence was eventually fine, it took a little bit of time, and it just essentially – he wasted his rookie year because of how bad that situation was in Jacksonville.
Organizationally, that is a question that the Texans should still have to answer at some point in time. Are you putting C.J. Stroud in the best possible position to be successful? That was a question we asked multiple times last year of Davis Mills. I mean, regardless, we might have all been able to put the puzzle pieces together and answer that question ourselves, which was not only no, but hell no. Like, if you're really trying to see what Mills is made of and he can be the guy, then you would have done a hell of a lot more than just give him a Brandon Cooks and piece together that offensive line last year. It's just my opinion, but I think we would all agree. I think it's a fair question to still ask this organization today. In 2 months, have you put C.J. Stroud in the best possible position to win?
Not win, but just be successful. That's
what I mean. Be successful. And the reason why I brought the Texans up and I addressed what they've done to improve their receiving core in relation to Cleveland, dude, where the hell would DeAndre Hopkins fit amongst an Amari Cooper, a Donovan Peoples-Jones, a Marquise Goodwin? Like, when you hear that report from Jacina Anderson saying, Cleveland Browns, Elijah Moore, aren't that interested in bringing in another wideout. I could see that. Where the hell would he fit? I could tell you exactly where he'd fit. He'd be a number one dude here in Houston, Texas. I guarantee you that. It's early in this process, man, I think. I don't foresee, like, Hopkins or a team making a decision on him. Who was it? The Chiefs and the Bills, right? Am I getting those two teams right that were in on initial trade negotiations with the Cardinals before they released him?
It's hard to say.
It's tough because that contract was it was rough to try to trade for somebody like that with the contract.
You're not.
So they don't pull a trigger. They don't get a deal done, but you still got to be in on D-Hop because it's D-Hop. It's D-Hop, and then who's the next best receiver that's a free agent right now out there?
Nobody.
Nobody. Yeah.
It's June.
So he controls the market, right? Doesn't he have, like, all the leverage?
But Hopkins? Like, no, he doesn't have.
Hold on. Hold on. Let me finish. It's June. Doesn't he have all the leverage at some point? Like, when you get deeper into this and you've prepared your team, like, you've drafted, you've signed free agents, what's going to happen in training camp, man? Dudes are going to get hurt. You got a legitimate number one out there. It's DeAndre Hopkins.
Is he?
I've touted,
you know, the prospect of bringing him back, but at the same time, if he were a real number one, somebody would have signed him. There would be competition to sign the guy, and that's just not there. Like, he's been a free agent for a long time, and it seems like he's doing more to get his free agency out there than anybody else. I think that the name DeAndre, it's a big name, and it's in lights, and you see the Pro Bowls, and you see all the production over the course of his career, but what you're seeing now is he's not that guy anymore.
But have you seen that? Have you seen that with your eyes? Have you seen a guy that has just fallen off?
I mean, I don't have to see it. I know it by the rest of the league, because the league isn't lining up to go get this guy. Nobody, and the Cardinals said, you know what? We can't find a trade partner. We're just going to release you.
I think it's got to be deeper. I think it's got to be deeper than that. Go ahead,
Fee. I think the problem could be what DeAndre Hopkins want as far as money, because free agency kind of been over and everybody paid what they paid to get their team better. I mean, is there a lot of teams with a lot of money to give him what he wants?
You can
or
always,
is he willing to take maybe a minimum?
You can always make, well, he's not going to take the minimum, but you can always figure it out as a team.
I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. got what's his deal? $16 million. Is that his deal?
Coming off of an ACL.
15, 16, yeah.
But when's the last time you saw him play regularly healthy?
The Super Bowl.
Two years ago.
Okay, but again, that tells you all you need to know, that a team was willing to give the Odell Beckham Jr. that sort of money, and nobody seems willing to do that with DeAndre Hopkins.
For a guy that showed he's still an elite talent at the receiver position, and he only played half of the season last year because he got popped for PEDs.
Well, that's another issue.
It is an issue.
Again,
you're right.
If he were still that guy, the league would be all over it. But the league's not all over it. A lot of times, the league knows.
The league knows.
The tape doesn't lie. I'm not grinding DeAndre Hopkins' tape from last year, but the tape doesn't lie. And if he would have put out really good tape last year, and to where he's like a number one elite type guy, then the league would be all over it. And the fact that they're not, and the fact that the Cardinals could not find a trade partner last year, the Hopkins trade stuff was out there the entire offseason, the beginning of the offseason. And the fact that the Cardinals could not find a trade partner tells you all you need to know, that there's just not a lot of interest. And the fact that Arizona said, you know what, we're just going to let you go, we're going to take the hit, and we're not even going to bring you to camp, that tells you all you need to know. The Cardinals could have just played this out a little bit longer, and they said, you know what, we're going to wash our hands of it. So that's where his value is. There's just not a lot of value. Once you get to 30 years old in the NFL as a skill position guy, especially somebody with his history of injuries and the PED thing, there's just not a lot of value. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't help the Texans, because he can, because that receiver room is not good.
He brings a lot of value to the Texans.
He's not a one. He's not a one.
He's a one on the Texans.
Yes, that is true. He is a one on the Texans.
I mean, just think about that, Spo. Like, he's a one on the Texans. And look at it. Look at it from an objective point of view, like a general point of view, like what that organization is. It is one that has turned the page with a rookie quarterback. They have
You don't have to convince me on the Hopkins thing. I've been all for it this entire time. I've said that they should go and try to make life as easy as possible. I don't think that Hopkins has value across the league. That's why I think that this is a real possibility, because you just don't see it around the league.
At this point in time, though, I just think, like, this is not going to be something that's resolved in a week, in 2 weeks. I think he's going to be out there dangling, and when somebody's get hurt, the value is going to end up being there, because that guy's out there unsigned, and that's when you start talking about, like, hey, when you're the Texans, you know what? Like, Robert Woods, he's been dealing with this, that, and the other thing. John Mechie, maybe not coming along like we thought. Tank Dell doesn't look like he's going to be ready. Nico Collins, maybe he is who he really is with Mills or Stroud. Doesn't matter. We need a freaking dude. Are the Texans in a position at that point in time to pay more money to DeAndre Hopkins than anybody else in the league? Because it would put C.J. Stroud in the best possible position to succeed.
If I'm Hopkins, I'm trying to sign quick.
It's going to be a question.
Just to get a job and show that you still have something left. And the longer that this goes, you saw it with Beckham. And I know Beckham was coming off the injury last year, but he could not find a job last year.
Yeah. All right. He's Adam Spillane, Sean Bajani. We're in for Locker and Lopez. Final segment coming up next before we get Mr. Ronald Aloysius Hughley and Brandon Scott in studio. But first, coming up, positive signs that key Astros are turning a corner. That's next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Yeah, buddy, In the Loop back with you. In for Locker and Lopez, I'm Sean Bajani. He's Adam Spillane. Figgy Fig spinning it. Coming up, we'll have Ron Hughley and B. Scott in for Clint Sterner for their program. They will take you up until 6 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate everybody being a part of the show to this point today. If you'd still like to get in, 713-572-4610, you can call or text the Trailer Wheel and Frame text line. We got a text saying, where was it? We got a whole bunch of them. Said, am I the only one that thinks B. Scott and Cecil Shorts sound the same? No. It's funny that guy texted that in because we got a text earlier saying, I don't know who's talking. These guys both sound the same. I have never heard that.
I haven't either.
From, you know, me and Spo when we do a show together, that you and I sound alike. Never heard that before.
Biggie, be the judge.
I don't think y'all sound alike.
I don't know. Somebody seems to think so. Hey, it's all good. Whatever. Yeah, there you go. It's the first text. Am I the only one that thinks B. Scott sounds like Cecil Shorts? No. In fact, everybody sounds like.
That's kind of low-hanging fruit at this point.
It is. I thought I was the first one to point that out. Maybe I was a year or so ago, but it was one of those things like you thought it, but you didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you never know how that's going to come across. But, yeah, I jump on that train now since everybody has that same thought. What about you, Spo? What thoughts do you have in regards to these turnarounds that we're seeing with the Astros, with some individual players in mind? Tucker, noticed him over the course of the last couple of games. He's raised his batting average 10 points, had a 3-for-4 night. Last night, hitting .277 now. Alex Bregman, larger sample size because we know his struggles. Over the last 9 games, and you can look at now, probably about the last 15 games, he's hitting been hitting about 300+. But over the last 9 games, he's raised his average 28 points, batting .247 now, starting to produce. Bullpen got the job done again last night. Montero highlighted in that. He looks like he's starting to put it together, be more consistent. Brian Abreu rebounded from a couple of bad outings as well. Jose Abreu over the course of the last few games, starting to maybe see the ball, hit the ball a little bit better, harder. Almost went oppo last night for a homer. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? I mean, these key individuals are starting to kind of put things together. And even during that most recent win streak, Spo, like I think we started to see the whole team kind of, you know, finally play complete ball games.
Well, it helps when you play the A's. I mean, the schedule had a lot to do with that. And whenever you can play 6 games in, you know, the span of 9 days against the A's, you're going to pick up some wins. And that's what... So they were able to take advantage of that portion of the schedule. It's interesting you brought up Tucker because he's had a bad year. Like he just hasn't been very good. The offense has been fine. Defensively, where he was the best right fielder in baseball last year, at least in the American League, he's been bad out in right field.
Had a rough game a couple of games ago.
He's been one of the worst outfielders in the sport, which is surprising. And so that's one of those odd, you know, parts of this season that I'm interested to see how that goes the rest of the way. Is it just kind of a 2-month blip, or is it, you know, something more? Because sometimes defense does fall off and it happens very unexpectedly. So that's just something to watch. It was good though to see him have a good offensive game yesterday because he's important. You know, offensively they have not been good offensively this season. Part of it is not having Altuve for the first 40 something games of the season, and you really start to feel his value once he's back in there, just because. You know, Dubon did fine, and Dubon, you know, he racked up hits and some quality at bats, but he doesn't give you power. You know, he can get on base, and defensively he's pretty good, but he just doesn't have that same sort of pop. He doesn't have that same, you know, he's not striking fear into, you know, the hearts of opponents.
Yeah.
So it's been good to get Altuve back, and Altuve's had a couple of really nice games, had the grand slam the other day, so you'll take that. The big one, though, Bregman's going to be fine, too, you know. Bregman's numbers kind of get shadowed by the 0-for-18 to start the season. So if you just take that 0-for-18 out, you know, the numbers look a whole lot better than they do right
that
now.
That stretches kill you early on in the season.
Yeah.
Like Montero, take for example. Like his ERA went from .267 to just shy of 8 because of four bad outings.
Four is a lot, though, for a reliever.
It is a lot, but four outings over the course of a 12-day stretch. Guess what he's done since then? Nobody's going to give him credit for it now because you look at the ERA, but, you know, four out of the last six outings.
Six out of seven.
Is it six out of seven
now? It's six out of seven without allowing a run, and the ERA is still not good in that span because he had a four-run meltdown in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago. So it's always reliever ERAs are always a little bit dangerous, and I'm not, you know, and Montero was not good. Mm-hmm. There was some luck, though, with that, and you can kind of look at the numbers a little bit and say, you know, he's not nearly as bad as what the results say.
Right.
So that was encouraging, and you are seeing it start to come back to where he was supposed to be. Abreu is the one, though, where the eye test said that he was bad. The numbers said that he was bad. But over the last week, you're starting to see some signs of life, and you're starting to see some power. He nearly hit a home run the first game in Oakland. He did get one the last game in Oakland. And then the game on Monday against Minnesota, I think, was probably one of the more encouraging games that he's had, because you started to see him, again, he hit the ball hard, but he was able to pull velocity. And so he's facing Johan Duran in the ninth or tenth inning of the game on Monday, and Duran's throwing 104.
Yeah.
And with two strikes, he hits a fastball hard into left field. So not only was he able to hit the fastball, he was able to pull the fastball at 104.
And that's
something that he wasn't able to do early in the season. And I talked to a Twins coach before the game on Wednesday, and I just asked him, you know, because he said Abreu, when they played out in Minnesota back in April, Abreu looked really bad, he said. So I asked him, are you seeing a difference? He said, yeah, he's not nearly as bad as what I thought. And you know, when our report said that he couldn't hit a fastball, and then he, you know, turns around on a 104. So
yeah,
obviously that's still there. So signs of life, which is what you're looking for. You're just looking for little things right now with him.
Yeah, with him specifically, for sure. But, you know, we've seen Brian Abreu already look really good this year. We've seen Rafael Montero look pretty good, you know, and over the course of the last five games, he's pitched in higher leverage situations. And you know, that 10-1 ball game that he threw in the other night, you know, I'd love to see him in that. And in the very next outing, you know, he's pitching in a two run ball game. I love that, because you might need to throw him out there in a 10-1 to work on something, to just build confidence,
somebody,
you know, to face a certain type of a hitter. Yeah. And get outs, whatever the case may be. That's why I like Dusty. That's where I don't feel like, you know, he gets enough credit, is for, you know, finding those opportunities to just help build a guy's confidence. But I mean, there's plenty of things you can criticize him for, but I started looking at the numbers, and you know, we know this. I mean, we're around it all the time. You're out there every day, but we hear what people are saying. We read what people are saying. The fact that, you know, Tucker and Bregman have taken, you know, kind of brunt of some of the criticism, along with Abreu and some of the pitching, now that they're kind of starting to come back together. There was a stretch earlier this season when they were playing the Blue Jays, the Braves, and the Rays, like back-to-back-to-back series, right? And this was obviously after, you know, they'd struggled out of the gate. They kind of thrive against better competition. They had a really good stretch during those teams. And I'm looking at the upcoming schedule, and hey, you got to certainly finish this series off with the Angels on a positive note, but you've got the Blue Jays coming up, you've got the Guardians coming up, you got the Reds around the corner. I mean, these are some middling, like, okay ball clubs. I mean, maybe not playoff contending teams, but some better ball clubs than what you've been facing in the freaking A's. Prime time for the Astros to start taking advantage of guys playing better ball together. I still believe this. In the next 3 weeks, I know the Astros are still 2.5 out of the Rangers right now, but I mean, I think the Rangers end up looking up at the Astros much sooner than later within the division.
I mean, 3 weeks, that's a short amount of time to pick up three games.
Damn, you feeling it like that, Sean?
I'm feeling it like that. Because
they just lost the series to the Twins.
I know the Rangers
they scored five runs last night.
Really good.
Why you always got to come at it like that? But they did just lose their series to the Twins.
And
didn't even play Correa and Buxton missed the last game.
I'm looking at the schedule, and
Buxton plays twice a week.
You've got the Rangers at the end of this month into early July. So that's right around that three and a half week mark. You have an opportunity to make those 2.5 games up right there. But look, the Rangers aren't going to be hot the whole time. just like the Rays, just like the Astros, they're going to go through their ebb and flow of a season where they have a rough patch. And the Astros, I think, have starting to really put together some good, consistent baseball. I mean, just look at what J.P. France and Brandon Belak and now Ronel Blanco. I mean,
that's not the issue for the Astros, though. Like, the thing about the Rangers that's great about them is that they hit a lot more consistently. If the Astros can start hitting the way that they did,
you know that old adage, though, B. Scott?
What's that?
Good pitching beats good hitting every time.
Well, no, I hear you, but that is the difference between the Astros and the
Rangers'
other teams.
Pitching is bad, though. I mean, you have Eovaldi and DeGrom. I mean, DeGrom hadn't even pitched. John Gray's been awesome. John Gray's finally pitching like the number three pick that he was 10 years ago. But the problem that you have with Texas is that Seager missed time and DeGrom has missed time, and that team is still in first place. Like, they didn't miss a beat without those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the difference between the Astros and the other teams that are at the top, and I think we were talking about this last week at some point or maybe earlier in the week, but the difference between the Astros and, say, the Rangers or the Rays and the other teams that are at the top of the league, look at even the teams that are at the top of the National League, they're hitting more consistently. And when the Astros hit and when they're a more complete team, they're obviously among the best in the league.
It'd be nice if they could consistently score six, seven runs is asking for a lot.
I'm about to say, damn. Which Astros team you think? I mean,
but they don't consistently hit, though. I mean, that's the problem.
They are inconsistent. Yeah, right. They will bang out 12 against the Brewers in one game and then get shut out the next two games. Yeah, and then, you know,
we've seen that before. But, you know, like consistently getting runners in scoring position. You know, there's a reason why the numbers are not so eye popping in regards
to the lack of power. It's the lack of
power
that has stood out at the start of the season, where you are paying a first baseman a significant amount of money and he has 9 extra base hits and he's played the entire year. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. So when all your power not having Altuve, that's a big loss of power right there with that lineup. But when the first baseman, whose job it is to hit for power, doesn't hit for power, then it really hurts the rest of your lineup.
Well,
that's what they're dealing with.
When Bregman's struggling, when Tucker's struggling, when there's no Altuve, when you're still struggling to get production consistently out of the catching position. Like, it all adds up. And
these jokers are 10 games over 500.
And 20th in home runs in all of baseball.
It's crazy,
20th.
Man.
Speaking to Adam's point about lack
and
of
what
power.
What are they, like, OPS? I think they were bottom six.
They've been bottom third for pretty consistently.
These jokers are 10 games over 500.
Yep.
Hey, it helps when you can pitch and when you can field. That gets you a lot of wins, and they are a run prevention team.
It's crazy though. Like, when you say you can pitch, and I know they lead the league in ERA, don't feel like it though.
Because all their guys got hurt. Like, that's the thing.
It don't feel like it though.
A lot of their guys who also have success do so while working through traffic.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.